into the sin bin. This is Penalty Box Radio.
Three-time best sports blog winner.
With Justin Bradford.
Two-time toast of Music City best sports reporter.
And Glenn Blackwell. Brought to you by E610 Athletes. It's time to talk all things hockey in the Music City. Penalty Box Radio is on. Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. This is Justin Bradford, and it's the Gover 3 Hour here. Jeremy K. Gover in for Glenn Blackwell. Glenn's working the CMAs, that mess that is downtown, and the potential snowy weather as well. So, Gover, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, great.
Come on.
Let's pull the curtain back on this. You're flying solo tonight.
I am flying solo.
I was in the studio.
For two hours.
So you're like, Gover, dude, just stay. And I'm like, I don't really want to. I want to go home and be my family, you know? I want to get some food.
Oh, you're pulling the family guilt trip on me?
Yeah, I have a family card I can use every once in a while. And this is a great excuse for that because we just decided this like 5 minutes ago that I was going to join you for...
Well, you were here, so I thought you should stay.
See?
Because we have a great show. Because there was breaking news yesterday that happened. We want to cover it today.
I'm not saying the show's not great.
Thank you. Because we cover all things Hockey Music City. And what's really important is that the NWHL announced that their All-Star game is coming to Nashville. And that is huge. That is huge for hockey and for women's hockey. And we're very lucky because right now we are joined by the commissioner of the NWHL, Danny Ryland. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Happy to have you back. You've been on here twice before and right when the league started and back in 2017, and very excited for this news that came out. I guess let's go ahead and just get right to it. How did this come about, making the All-Star game for the NWHL happen in Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, I think it started with Sean Henry and the guys at the Predators organization. They saw an opportunity here, and, you know, at the NWHL level, we wanted to be someplace that was exciting and different, but also a hockey town. And having been fortunate enough to make it to Nashville for the NHL All-Star as well as a cup final, I mean, there's no better hockey town than Nashville, so it was a perfect spot for us.
Danny, this is Jeremy K. Gover of thegamenashville.com filling in. I have to ask you about the captains. It just seems like such a great place to start this event with those two wonderful ladies.
Oh, totally. Shannon Sabados and Lee Steckline are two of the best in the world. And for them to be captains, it's going to be really a special weekend.
And again, Danny Ryland, the commissioner of the NWHL, joining us. And so looking at this as well, there's going to be a skills competition that's going to be held at Ford Ice Center. What is this going to entail? I mean, we see the skills competition with the NHL, and so this is going to be a very exclusive event. I think they said only 500 people are going to get to attend this event, so it's going to be a great up-close and personal event with these players. So what's that competition going to be like?
Yeah, on Saturday we're going to be at the Ford Ice Center for some youth hockey and grassroots activation as well as a skills competition. And we're all over the place. We're doing hardest shot. We're doing the shootouts. We're doing all the skills to really highlight these fantastic all-stars. And then the big show, you know, going to the Bridgestone on Sunday is going to be amazing to have our 40 all-stars in there. You know, we're hoping to make a really big impact and maybe even set an attendance record for professional women's hockey in the United States.
Wow, that'd be awesome. So probably my favorite part of the entire weekend, and there's obviously no disrespect to the game or the skills competition because I'm looking forward to both of those, but my favorite part of this whole thing, this effort, is that you guys are going to be offering something special for the girls and the Learn to Skate program the Predators have.
Yes, I mean, an opportunity to be on the ice with all of our all-stars is something really special. I think that it's important to inspire the next generation, and the role models in the National Women's Hockey League do just that, just like many boys were probably inspired by the guys on the Predators. So to light that fire with all the young girls in Nashville is super important to us.
And for the game to be coming to Nashville, I mean, the previous games in Minnesota, Pittsburgh, obviously growing the game has been so important to you and to the league and just to women's hockey in general. But coming to Nashville, a place that's really bumping with hockey right now, that's the it city. It's a place where hockey is really growing. What kind of impact do you see that this is going to have just overall, just on hockey in general, and then specifically just on girls wanting to play hockey?
Yeah, I mean, bringing our All-Star game to Nashville and knowing the unreal atmosphere that exists there is going to be special for our athletes too. And I think that, like I said, just to be able to touch more players and let them know that, you know, girls can be professional hockey players as well, it's a unique opportunity. And I think that it's been really great to work with the Predators and see that they believe in that as well. They want to grow hockey in all of Nashville, not just the boys' hockey, but the girls and the women from the grassroots level all the way to the pros.
Can you kind of take us inside the decision-making process for the desire to go to neutral sites for the All-Star Weekend? I think it's an extremely important thing to grow the game, but I would love to get your insight on why that's important for your league.
Yeah, so our 2017 All-Star Game, we went to Pittsburgh and partnered with the Penguins. And in that 1 month of February alone, our entire fan base grew 15%. So that was kind of an eye-opening statistic for us. And knowing that our league and our fan base and the opportunity to make an impact is much larger than our at that time, four markets. So last year, 2018, we brought our All-Star Game to Minnesota and partnered with the Wild. We saw that exact same growth. It actually led to an expansion club out to Minnesota. So just knowing the impact that we've had when we've gone to these new markets. And also, it's a fun event. You know, our players have fun as well. And I think we all remember why we started playing or why we fell in love with the game in the first place. So to bring our 40 All-Stars to Nashville, we're excited to let them kind of see what all that Nashville has to offer as well and make it a really fun weekend.
Do the home clubs that have the existing franchises, are they in support of this idea? Because I would imagine that they'd probably be, they know they understood the long game, right? Okay, we got to grow the game, and this is the best way to do that with neutral sites. But at the same time, I'm sure they'd want to be rewarded for ever hosting one as well. What's that dynamic like?
Yeah, I think it's a special honor to be on an All-Star team. I think that our players embrace it. I know that when Haley Moore, our deputy commissioner, called up Lee Steckline and Shannon Sabados and asked them to be the captains of this weekend, they both were incredibly honored and incredibly excited for the opportunity. And I've even got a couple of text messages from some players or staff members saying, like, I'm going to work extra hard now because I want to go to Nashville. So I think all the players in the league understand their role in growing the game, but also see this as a fun opportunity to play in a new venue and a new site and to have an impact.
And again, Danny Rylan, commissioner of the NWHL, joining us. And Danny, last time there was an All-Star game in Nashville, the NHL All-Star game, there's beautiful weather in the middle of January, the random week with 70-degree weather. So hopefully that happens again here because it's going to be beautiful out and it's going to be great for the game. And before I have to let you go, just there are so many young women that I've seen are just so excited. And a lot of parents that have young women playing the game and young girls playing the game are very excited about this event, just in particular because of what it's going to mean to their daughters as well. If there's a message that you could send out to those daughters, to those young women that are playing hockey right now and their excitement level, what would that message be?
Yeah, I think it's keep having fun and keep dreaming big and knowing that if you work hard and put your heart into anything, that it's possible. So I'm so excited for the girls who are going to get to see NWHL hockey for the very first time. And, you know, we've even heard of youth hockey organizations changing their schedules up. So they're in Nashville February 9th and 10th. And, I mean, that means everything to us. Those girls are not only our fans, but the next girls who are going to play in this league as well and support us and help us continue to grow. So that means everything to me. So we'll keep at it if they keep at it. So that's where we are.
Absolutely. Well, Danny, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us. And we're so, so very excited about the NWHL All-Star Game coming to Nashville. Thank you again.
Yes, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, the NWHL All-Star Game, All-Star Weekend in Nashville, February 9th and 10th. In Nashville, so the All-Star game is going to be February 10th at Bridgestone Arena following the St. Louis Blues game. So it's a matinee game for the Blues versus Predators. And then immediately following that is the NWHL All-Star game. So you have tickets to that game, you stay, and you get to experience this. And then they're going to sell single tickets just for the NWHL All-Star game. You have an opportunity to go. So whether you're a season ticket holder, you're going to be there or not, or you just want to get tickets to the NWHL All-Star game, you get to go.
Words cannot describe how excited I am for this.
So pumped.
It's going to be awesome, and it's going to be great. I've long said that one of my favorite things about a Predators game is walking to the Predators game and seeing a dad holding his daughter's hand, like on the way in jerseys, right? Mm-hmm. This is only going to build that.
Oh, it's only going to build that. And then the tickets are going to be very affordable, $25, available starting November 28th on Ticketmaster. That's for the All-Star Skills Competition for the first 500 fans going there. So I'm sure there's going to be a wave you can get in there, but I love the Skills Competition because that's when personality comes out. They get to display their skill. There's going to be a lot of fun. And then there's also autograph signing sessions. as well with that. So, folks, there's so much excitement. Predators.com, naturalpredators.com for more information on the NWHL All-Star Game. We're very, very excited about that. Jeremy, before we have to go to break, because we have so many guests, we have Catherine Silverman, Athletic, coming on next to cover the Coyotes, which the Predators play tomorrow night. And then we have Dennis Bernstein. He's with the fourth period. He covers the LA Kings, and that's who the Predators play on Saturday. So lots of hockey to talk about. But I know you've talked about the San Jose game a lot already, probably in the past 2 hours. So in 30 seconds or less, what were your thoughts on that game?
Go. Horrible first period. Great second period.
Yep.
Unfortunate third period.
Unfortunate.
Yep.
It was unfortunate. Overall, once the Predators, I think, woke up, they played a really good hockey game. It was actually, after the whole bleh of the first period, it was an exciting hockey game to watch.
How do you spell that?
B-L-O-U-H-H-H-H.
Blah. No, it was, look, the first period was one of the worst, it actually probably was their worst of the season, and then the second period was one of their best of the season. The third period, they just dug themselves too big of a hole, you know? You can give up those chances if you're tied or you're ahead by a couple, but when you spot yourself a three-point deficit, it's against one of the better teams, by the way. It's tough to come back from that.
I had a tweet ready to go, too, if Nashville would have figured it out and won the game, because especially with the blowing leads. But it ended up both teams blew leads in that game, so it was a choose-your-own-adventure. It really, really was.
I loved those books as a kid.
Yeah, because you never know what's going to happen unless you cheat. And usually
you
most
quickly look.
And
I don't want to go back.
That's
a short entry. I don't even want to look at that.
That's kind of what the game was like last night. It really was. It was a choose-your-own-adventure. You didn't know what was going to happen.
No, you really didn't. Especially Rocco Grimaldi's goal, by the way, it was gorgeous. But second of all, you really did think, right? Oh, they overcame it again.
They're going to do it.
They're actually going to pull this off. And then San Jose scores two goals in, I don't know, 30 seconds, whatever it was. Maybe less than that, something like that. They just couldn't come back from it. You can't spot yourself a three-goal deficit to a good team and expect to win.
And imagine if the power play gets going. These teams keep testing the Predators' power play. So if it could only get going.
Look, no team is scared to take a penalty.
No, like, sure, I'll hook him.
Because, yeah, okay, on paper, look at the talent. We probably shouldn't take penalties. Well, but look at their power play.
Meh. Last.
Yeah,
last. Good. Okay, up next, we're going to preview the Arizona. Almost did it. The Arizona Coyotes. Not the Phoenix Coyotes, the Arizona Coyotes, with Catherine Silverman of The Athletic. Up next, Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hey, this is Roman Yossi. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, Jeremy K. Gover joining me for his final segment. He's been here for 2.5 hours. I don't know how he's surviving. And he's throwing up a gang sign right now while he's taking a selfie.
Look, so I'm trying to take a picture showing this is my third hour and I couldn't see you.
Anchor down?
Yeah, anchor down. You. All right. Now we're going to look ahead to tomorrow night. As the Nashville Predators are taking on the Arizona Coyotes, we have Catherine Silverman with The Athletic online with us right now. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing just fine.
Don't mind us, Catherine.
Don't mind us. We know each other too well.
I'm not bringing him to Arizona with me tomorrow, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, Gover's going to be there tomorrow. So let's go ahead and get started with special teams. The Predators are struggling on the power play. And now they're going to be facing the Arizona Coyotes, who have the number one penalty kill in the league at 90.6%. This is not boding well for the Nashville Predators' power play to get up and going because it is struggling immensely. What is making the Arizona Coyotes' penalty kill so successful this season?
Honestly, part of it's just luck at this point. You know, I don't think it's sustainably going to stay at 90%. A good part of it, honestly, is that their special teams, their penalty kill has been scoring more than their power play. and their power play is not the worst ranked in the league. So that should tell you that it's not just that the power play is not producing.
Oh, we know.
Isn't. their power play is not great, but their penalty kill is really good right now. So I think part of it's that they have two of the best penalty killing forwards. And I don't just say that because I cover them. You know, Michael Grabner, he's coming from other teams. He's a lot of fun to watch on the penalty kill because he genuinely enjoys it. at the beginning of the season, you know, they asked him, they said, hey, why do you like playing on the penalty kill? He said, you know, it's fun to maybe try and turn it around and, you know, send the puck back up the other end of the ice, maybe get a scoring chance out of it when you're the team that's down a man. So I think he sort of views it as like a game. And Brad Richardson's kind of the same way. You know, he's someone who plays the penalty kill with the aspirations of hopefully scoring, not just preventing a goal, but getting one himself. And they've been doing it. They have something like 9 or 10 penalty kill goals so far, which is a little absurd. And I don't think it's going to stay that way, but doesn't bode great for Nashville. But if there's any consolation, you know, I do think it will eventually fall back to earth at least a little bit. So.
And special teams overall, there's been plenty of articles talking about special teams as well, and Derek Stepan being an integral part of that too, just in terms of he's one of the, not new faces, but newer faces just to the organization. There's been a lot of change going on with this organization as they're putting together a team that's extremely competitive. And for me, they're one of my quote-unquote surprise picks to make the playoffs this year, and because of the new faces there in the team that's being put together. Just what has he been able to contribute to this team, not just in special teams, but overall helping to get this team over the hump to be very competitive again?
Oh, honestly, he's contributed almost everything. You know, he's a leader off the ice, and I know that gets thrown around a lot, sometimes a little bit too much, but he's the kind of guy who, when you talk to the other, like the younger guys that they have on the team, the ones that are in their first or second NHL seasons, they talk about how he brings up specific experiences that he's had, ways that he's handled, not just, you know, the pressure and the nerves and the money, but the way that he's handled on-ice situations. Like, oh, you know, when I played in that type of a situation on the ice, that scenario, I remember when that happened to me, this is how I handled it. And so they're learning from him kind of almost in a coaching standpoint, too. But then he's also, I mean, like you said, he was brought on to help them become more competitive. He's good on the penalty kill. He's good on the power play. He's incredibly cognizant of what he needs to do on special teams and at even strength. He's a really good two-way guy. And I think he's a smart player for them. He may not be their top scorer, and I don't think he will be at any point this year, but I think he's the driving force behind some of their scoring.
What difference has Alex Galchenyuk made to this team once he was able to finally join them on the ice and take regular shifts and just be healthy, basically?
Offense. This is a team that, you know, they got shut out 3 times in their first 4 games of the season. That was they keep coming up with like new and historic ways to start their season in the wrong direction, and that was their way to do it this year. You know, they only scored I believe it was 3 goals in their first 4 games, and one of them was a shootout goal. So, you know, not great. He's obviously an offensively gifted player. He's been back for 10 games. He already has 8 points. That puts him, I believe, 5th in scoring on the team. He's good on the power play. He's good at setting the guys up on the power play. Not amazing defensively, but they have good defense. You know, they were suppressing shots. It was the scoring that they were really lacking to start. It was really hurting them. So, you know, having him back is a plus in that area. I don't think that can possibly be overstated.
And again, Catherine Silverman with The Athletic joining us, talking about the Arizona Coyotes. The Nashville Predators take on Arizona tomorrow night. So, Catherine, looking at the news that happened, that broke, as Jacob Chychrun signing a 6-year extension. Just he's a young guy. I remember being at the draft, and I remember when there was a trade broke for Arizona to move in position to draft him, when I was thinking, oh, he might be available for the Predators to draft. And then, boom, Arizona swoops in and takes him. And obviously a great, great pickup for them. What does it mean for this club to have a young defenseman like Chychrun to continue on and sign that 6-year extension, showing that he's willing to stay there in Arizona?
I think it's huge. I mean, obviously the most important extension, not to overhype Chychrun there, you know, the Oliver Ekman-Larsson extension this summer, keeping him around long-term was more important. That was their primary focus. But Chychrun's younger, obviously. You know, he's, like you said, he was drafted in 2016. He's just now 20. He's not going to turn 21 until the season ends. And he's been in the league for 2 years now. You know, and he looked like an NHL player when he came in at 18. I really expected he would get sent down before the season started, and then they kept him, and it was kind of a surprise. And then I thought, oh, you know, he'll get his 9 games, experience the league, and then go down, and he stuck around for the full year. And it looked like he fits. So I think that's having that maturity. Like,
that almost unteachable level of maturity, because it's really hard for an 18-year-old to come into the league and look like they're perfectly comfortable with it, but he did. So I think having that perspective and that just sort of comfort level at that age, and obviously that talent too, on their blue line until he's, I think, 27, that's going to be huge for them.
Oh, it absolutely will be. And you mentioned Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Let's talk about him a little bit here. The named captain, he's been one of the guys that's been consistent in terms of just the faces on his team with all the different changes that have been made, and him signing that extension, you know, showing that he wants to stay there and be there, and obviously a leader on and off the ice. Just what has he brought to the organization in terms of that consistency level for a lot of these young players? Because him being 27 now, he's obviously the leader that they're looking up to. Being only 27, he's their leader.
Absolutely. I think he's almost in a similar situation to what Chychrun is right now. You know, when he came into the league, he came in young. He was quiet, but he looked like he was ready to go. You know, he sounded comfortable. He looked comfortable, and he's continued to grow into that role. So even though, like you said, he is only 27, he's a wise 27. You know, he's one of the guys who is very comfortable playing such a leadership heavy role on the team. And I think the players look up to him in the same way that they do Stepan. You know, he's a guy who they can come to for off-the-ice advice. He's a guy who they can come to talk about what's going on the ice. And it's kind of rare that you find those guys who are a pure talent but also have that ability to communicate what to do right to the other players on the team. You know, it's not just instinctual to him. He's able to explain how to get better to the other guys as well. And I think that's huge for the team, and obviously for the fans as well. You know, having someone mm-hmm. who's been there through some of the less pretty years, to put it nicely. You know, he's been there through their ugliest seasons. He was there when they made the Western Conference Finals. So he's been there through it all, and I think they really appreciate that he was willing to stick around. So
that obviously makes a big difference to that organization to keep him around as they're continuing to grow. And before we have to let you go, I want to ask, because you wrote about him, Lawson Crouse, drafted by the Florida Panthers, or a lot of people are kind of boo-hooing that and didn't really expect a lot out of him, said that he was kind of overhyped and everything. But your opinion of him, because he's been with the Coyotes now for a few years, what is your opinion of him? He's so young, yet still has a lot to prove as well. So what's your opinion on Lawson Crouse and what he can bring to the Coyotes in the future?
Kind of tough player to gauge. You know, I understood when people weren't super happy with that pick. I wasn't sure how well he was going to translate to the NHL level, and his scoring hasn't managed to translate, but you can tell when you watch him play that he's a guy who knows how to score. You know, for a bigger guy, for a heavier hitting style of play, he also understands the offensive side of the game. And so I'm still not entirely sure how consistent that's going to become in the next few years. He's obviously still young, but he's been in the league for a few years. We should have a better idea of sort of what he's able to bring. But he has 3 goals in 16 games so far this year. I think he's probably going to be a middle six guy, but he's fun to watch. And, you know, he's a guy who can stick up for his teammates, but still drive the offense when needed. So sure. not entirely sure where he's going to end up being. You know, I don't think 10th or 11th overall was necessarily where he should have gone, but he definitely looks like an NHLer, and he's a lot of fun to watch. So
sure. No, I mean, it's always interesting, especially there's a lot of young talent with Arizona, so they do things right. They'll be competitive for many, many years to come. But Catherine, we have to get going. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us tonight to help us preview the Coyotes.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, folks. Catherine Silverman of The Athletic. Follow her on Twitter at Cat M Silverman. Great stuff there. Great analysis of the Coyotes. Going to be a fun game in Arizona, where Jeremy K. Gover is actually going to be at this game. So make sure you're following him at Gover Time. Right, Jeremy?
I will be there tomorrow night.
You already have your zip up on because you're about to abandon me.
Well, you know, you forced me to stay.
Oh, I forced you to stay.
But I stayed for 2 great guests, not yes, for you. Let the record show.
Okay.
And nothing against Dennis, by the way, coming up next by any means.
You just got to get up early.
But at this point, that and, I'm pulling that family card again. You know, I got to get home to the family. So.
All right. Well, Gover, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you having me in.
All right, folks.
Appreciate you forcing me in. Sorry.
Yeah, forcing you. Sure. Yeah, you wanted to do it. Anyways, Dennis Bernstein of the Fourth Period coming up next here on Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Penalty Box Radio. Thank you.
welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, now all by my lonesome with producer Buck behind the glass, spinning those tunes. Winter weather outside potentially, so if you didn't get to Kroger, I am sorry that you missed out on that. But thanks again to Jeremy Kegover for joining us for the first two segments. Going to miss you these last two segments. Up next, we're going to have Dennis Bernstein. We're going to preview the LA Kings. Lots of news going on with the LA Kings. That trade, goaltender injuries, so many different things going on with LA right now that we're going to discuss with Dennis Bernstein. So that's coming up on Saturday. So again, Thursday in Arizona, then Saturday, finally, the Predators are back home off of their CMA road trip. Finally going to be back home Saturday to take on the LA Kings. So on the line with us is coming up very, very quickly is going to be Dennis Bernstein. We have Dennis Bernstein on the line of the fourth period. Dennis, welcome back to the show, man.
Hey, JB, what's going on, man? Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, great to have you on, man. I don't even know where to start with the LA Kings. It seems like there's so much to talk about, but I guess let's start with the big news that happened, that trade, Tanner Pearson and Carl Hagelin. Just what is your analysis on this, and how, does it help? Does it hurt? What are they trying to do here?
I think what it does is it clears cap space this summer, Justin. Yeah, so because, look, Tanner Pearson, solid kid, won a cup here in L.A. in 2014, a former first-round pick, kid who came through the system. But if you look at his numbers, look at his trends, 24 goals two seasons ago, 15 this season, zero. Right, from some 24 to 15 to zero, making what 3.5, 3.75 a year. It just wasn't happening here for him, and he's not the only one, Justin. So I'm not going to single out Tanner Pearson for his woes, but this team, they lack confidence. They look engaged. They look, you know what they look like, Justin? They look like they're very, like, just satisfied. Like a bunch of guys got paid. They won two cups. They hang out in the South Bay in Los Angeles, play hockey for millions of dollars. So an attitude change had to happen. It just this couldn't go on anymore. And I was at ice level each game. And watch that game. It was 2-0 leads, I think, after 6 minutes. You knew the game was over. You could feel the lack of energy coming from the Kings bench. And, you know, Willie DeJardin stepped into a real mess here. It's shocking because, I mean, I had this team contending for the division title 18 games ago, and now it looks like they're the worst team in the league right now. So I think with respect to Tanner, it just wasn't working here anymore. The old magic he had with Jeff Carter and Tyler Toffoli just wasn't happening anymore. He's on the third line, fourth line, just was not producing. So I don't think that Rob Blake had any choice. But, Justin, I don't think he's – this is just a first step. I think there's bigger steps coming. But they got back Carl Hagelin, who's a good guy, who's got similar scoring issues. But I really think what happened was they had two more years committed after this for Tanner. Carl's a free agent at this summer. So I just think they're clearing cap space for making other moves come June or July.
Yeah, and that's exactly what my next question was going to be. Just looking at cap friendly and seeing some of these contracts that LA has and their projected cap space of only $60,000. So that's really rough right there. And obviously, I mean, they won their cups. Kind of like Chicago, you got to get into this trouble where you win your cups, you pay your guys, and now you got to make moves. Is there any sort of inkling of what you think could happen or how much they want to make changes during the offseason or even later on this season?
Yeah, I think the next guy to move will be Tyler Toffoli, to be honest with you. I think that he's a guy who you, when you look at their lineup and you projected, let's say, going back to last year, Tyler's got to be a 30 to 35 goal scorer. He's that talented, right? Last year he had 24 goals, and I know that they were building in, there was a built-in excuse that Jeff Carter wasn't around for 55-some-on games, but this year, same thing. He is trending to 19 goals. That's not good enough for a guy making, I think, 4.5, 4.6. So I think that he would be, and I know that they've been attached to this deal, but he would be the lure for William Nylander in Toronto. I think that Toronto obviously needs more help defensively, but as you read some of the articles coming out of Toronto, they want more depth on the scoring. And it's better to have a guy who actually is playing and signed to a contract than a guy who won $7 million a year. So I think that's the next move. I think that both Tanner and Tyler, like it or not, their fate in Los Angeles is going to be tied together. And when they look at the failings of this team, they look at Tanner Pearson, who didn't do anything, and Tyler, who's underperforming. I think that would be the next guy to go. He's got a couple of years left on the field as well. He's affordable for a team like Toronto. So I think that's the next move. And if you want to take it to another level, I think you could even look at some core players. I think you could look at a guy like a Jeff Carter or even a Jonathan Quick if he ever gets healthy. Those guys have $5 million cap hits, Justin. So I think, and they've got about 4 years. Now they have these lifetime contracts, but now They've got 4 years left. So Jeff Carter at 32 or 33 might be usable for some. But he's still a 60-point player in my and, you know, every team, you know, there's always going to be a need for a goaltender league. So I think that the short-term move would be Tyler Toffoli. And I think big picture, if Rob really wants to blow it up and really have a big-time rebuild, I think you'd look at one of their core players. I don't think he's going to trade Drew Doughty or Anze Kopitar, but I think everybody else might be up for grabs on the roster.
So many changes for LA Kings fans have to deal with there. And this is Dennis Bernstein with the fourth period talking LA Kings with us. And you mentioned Jonathan Quick. Let's talk about goaltenders now, because currently on the roster, there are four, because two are an injured reserve, Jonathan Quick and Jack Campbell. Right. So you have Peter Budaj and Calvin Peterson. What's that situation like? Is it the kind of thing like in Vegas would happen when the goaltenders kept dropping, they just kept on playing? Or is this one of those things where at least, hey, it's going to get some good experience for some of these young guys?
Well, Justin, do you have a spare meniscus available? Because the Kings lead the league in torn goalie meniscus.
Oh, man.
So I think I quoted that statistic. Look, Cal Peterson is kind of like the future. Like if you think Quick is going to play out his contract or whatever, or not be the guy at some point in time, I think they look to Cal Peterson as the guy who's eventually going to be the successor in net. Jack Campbell did great in the short term here, I think better than people expected. So I think he would have stemmed the tide for until Jonathan Quick get back. And both guys' injuries are like 3 to 6, 4 to 6 weeks. Jonathan might be back in a couple of weeks. Jack's obviously longer. So I think the goaltending depth, I know they didn't think it would be tested to this extent a couple of weeks ago. To have Quick go out, and it's a second lower body injury this year. And when we talk about him and trade prospects down the line, he is, you know, the way he is athletic, the way his style is, lends itself probably as you get older towards injuries, or maybe he has to be less athletic, or just being playing angles more as opposed to being the athlete going out diving and doing the splits and things of that nature. So they're setting goal, to be honest with you. And Peter Budaj, he had no chance last night, Justin. Right. I mean, he got to put in the net, but you know, Toronto was gunning for them. They gave him four power plays, I think, in the first period. They struck on two, so he was set up to lose last night. He's a good guy. He's a good backup, solid in the room. The guys like him, so they have a depth. It's just that when you're down to your fourth string goaltender, like you mentioned in Vegas, and you face a team like Toronto, and then they go into Nashville, you know, on Saturday night, it's going to be a major test this road trip. So these are good goaltenders. They're going to get a baptism of fire, but it's a tough situation for them right now.
No, it absolutely is. And so what would you classify this as? Is this going to be something that they're going to go into full rebuild mode or a rebuild on the fly? What would you think is going to happen for the future of the Kings?
I think they're going to retool.
Retool.
I think the four core players alive, I'll include Dustin Brown in the course. There's five core players. Mm-hmm. You've got Quick, you've got Doughty, you've got Kopitar, you've got Carter. Right. I think maybe one or two of those, but I think your number one center, your number one defenseman, they're not going anywhere. Carter could be had. I don't think Brown's going to go anywhere because his emotional attachment to this team, I still see a lot of value to that. But a guy like Jake Mizzen, a guy like Alec Martinez, right? I mentioned Tyler Toffoli. Those guys could definitely go here if it really goes south. I think this road trip, I mean, they've got, after this road trip, they go to St. Louis, Chicago, and then obviously into Nashville against your guys. But after that, they come home and they have a bunch of four-point games. So although the season looks like it's dead and over, and now this trade of Tanner Pearson is another signal they're going in another direction, and two weeks after this, and then again, that coincides with William Nylander's deadline in Toronto of December 1st of having him sign a contract. So I think that you'll see significant players move. So I think they'll move the entire thing and back up the truck and move out even a guy like Kopitar's moment. What I think that the non-two core players that they have, will they move out everybody? I don't think so. Now, summertime, who knows? I mean, you know, who knows if Rob Blake will have the job in the summertime, right?
Sure.
He's gone through two coaches. This coach doesn't look like he's really been a change agent. You know, usually, Justin, you change to Willie Desjardins, you think the team gets a boost. And even worse with this coach, not better than John Stephens. So, and I joke on Twitter, all the wise guys that thought it was John Stephens' fault, this is squarely on the players. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no passion. There's no drive. It looks like they're comfortable. They got paid. And as you mentioned, that's what happens in a cup here. Guys get settled in. Guys get paid. They get older. They make their money. So where's the hunger? It doesn't look like this team is hungry anymore. And that's unfortunate, but it happens. We're all human beings. Mm-hmm. It even happens with professional athletes who are motivated to be their best. So I think that's what happens. I think you see a major retooling, but I don't think every single top player Los Angeles is going to leave. I don't think that the organization or ownership would stand for it. The fans certainly wouldn't stand for it. But I think you'll see significant changes before the end of the season in Los Angeles.
Sure. And before we have to let you go, I got to ask about this, especially because Jeremy K. Gover, the Predators Radio Network, is making sure I ask a question on the Global Series about the LA Kings' participation in that in the fall. And I mean, he's hoping that the Predators are going to be a part of that. So just your thought on the Global Series overall and how this comes about and what that excitement could mean just for some of those players, especially those that are from Europe.
Well, JB, we just came back from Helsinki.
Yeah.
We did it last year in Stockholm. It's an amazing time. If fans can afford to go over, and hopefully the Preds do go over, I mean, I don't think anybody has any check plates. So look, the Kings are going to play a preseason game in Berlin and then play a regular season game in the Czech Republic, in Prague. I'm not sure which team they're going to face at this point in time, but it's fantastic. The fans love it. You know, in Helsinki, they sold 26,000 tickets in 5 minutes for two games. I mean, they just eat it up. And it's like, if you've ever seen an NFL game in Europe, it's not just the two teams that are playing. Look, there were a ton of Lane jerseys and a ton of Barkov jerseys from Florida and Winnipeg. There were just a ton of hockey jerseys. The fans loved it. I talked to somebody at the arena there at the Hartwall, and they said usually Joker, who's the home team there, draws about 6,000. They had 13,000 legit sellout both nights. They love it. It's going to continue. It's a way to expand the brand and continue the popularity. And I think some people even think at some point in time, well, I can't see it. There might even be an international division in the NHL. But if you have an opportunity to go over just as a fan to experience NHL in Europe, it's an amazing time. We had a great time. I'm looking forward to next season as well when the Kings go over to Europe as well.
Well, you got me pumped for it. So I'm excited. I want to get over there and cover it. It'd be great to go experience hockey in another across the pond like that.
Yep.
So, well, Dennis, as always, really appreciate your time. Thank you for your brutal honesty as well. It's always great to have that kind of analysis.
JB, it's always great being on the air in Nashville with you anytime, and great talking to you again.
All right, folks. Dennis Bernstein with the fourth period. Follow him on Twitter at DennisTFP. Great coverage there down in SoCal about hockey there. And, boy, he gives his honest opinion, and I love that. All right, up next, we have plenty of Twitter questions talking about the Preds, the power play, what to do with Austin Watson coming back. All that coming up next. Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, I'm Mike Fisher. You're listening to the flagship of the Nashville Predators Radio Network, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. This is Justin Bradford. Glenn Blackwell's working the mess that is the CMA Awards in downtown. That was fun to have to try to get out of downtown down to the studio today. I can only tell you that. So, first of all, before we get to Twitter Q&A, Buck, I got to pose a question to you, bud, because we haven't heard your voice tonight.
Hit me.
Your thoughts on Titans over Patriots?
No, oh, God.
I was at that game.
Football's weird.
It is.
Football's weird. Yeah. I mean, I walked into the post-game press conference room after the Titans beat the Patriots 34-10, in which Tom Brady looked every bit of 41 years old.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's something that I can analyze or just, you know, football.
Football.
I was
six rows from the field.
Were you?
Yeah. Won some tickets. Girlfriend won some tickets, and we're able to be there. I lost my voice a little bit.
Did you say anything nasty to Brady?
No. And we actually had some really nice Patriots fans around us, too.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of – I tweeted out, I felt like I was surrounded by 1,000 Peter Griffins. that's what I felt like.
That's actually the best description that I've heard thus far. I mean, besides –
Chowder.
Besides this Patriots fan who is, I can only assume, sitting in the 300 level based on where the viral video looked, where she's tearing apart a Titan Up flag.
The free one.
With her teeth. Yes, the free one.
The free one.
That was gifted to fans. Yeah, that was basically the Boston sports fan experience in Nashville this weekend. I live downtown, and they were locust.
Locust.
The CMA Awards. Traffic was bad today.
Yeah.
It was not anything like what we dealt with this weekend.
Walked by FGL House, and I was like, oh, yeah, not going there. First of all, definitely not going there now.
I'm pretty sure I was conceived in a place like FGL House.
Oh, dear God. Okay, Twitter Q&A. Here we go. This one is from Craig from Craig. Oh, I need to highlight this. CPen31. There we go. I've seen a few comments from fans suggesting that Fabro may wind up being another VZ situation. Do you think there's any likelihood, or is it just paranoia? Both is really what I think it is. Dante Fabro, easily. I mean, it's the kind of thing now, especially the way that it is for college hockey players. He could wait it out. He could wait it out, and then he could go and sign as a free agent wherever he wants to when it gets to August, because it's just his rights are going to expire with the Nashville Predators. Now, let's take a look how Boston's doing and how Dante Fabro's doing. Boston University, he has played 7 games so far this season with 8 points, 3 goals, 5 assists. Pretty good right there. Boston University is currently 3rd in Hockey East. They're 3-1 in the conference, 3-5 overall, but they're just behind Northeastern and Massachusetts. They're vying to win their division. They're vying to win their conference. They're vying to go to the NCAA playoffs. The Frozen Four take place April 11th through 13th in Buffalo, New York, 2019. So if Boston University makes a run, he wouldn't even be here until the end of the regular season, the beginning of the first round, if they make that run. They don't, could be March if they want to sign him and bring him on board. I really don't know. It could go any way. The paranoia is totally understandable for this because of what happened with VZ, but not just because of that. Is where's Dante Fabro going to play? Unless the Nashville Predators trade away one of their top four defensemen, I don't think he's going to be good with, play 9 minutes on the third pairing, which, I mean, if they really want to spread it out more, they could give him a little bit more. But he needs to be playing in a top four role. That's the kind of player he's going to be. He's a first round pick. He's meant to be playing top four type of minutes. And they cannot give him that right now. So I totally understand if he wants to go somewhere else. If that's going to be the case, hopefully the Predators can trade for it. Hopefully they can get something out of that. Get other picks, get prospects, get something out of trading the rights to Dante Fabro if they know where he wants to sign or something. Whatever comes through with all that. But I think the paranoia, it's okay. It's understandable. But honestly, you can't be worrying about that. I mean, you can worry about it now, but that's not going to do any good until you get to the spring, or at least late winter, when you see how Boston's doing. If you see how Boston University is all of a sudden just tanking, and you know they're not even going to make the playoffs, they're not going to make a run in their conference playoffs, then you start thinking, okay, well, he's obviously going to be done the end of February, early March, so when is he going to be available to sign? That's really all there is right now, but I think it's totally understandable for people to be concerned just because there's no place for him to play right now. If there was a gaping hole in the top four on the blue line, I would totally imagine that he would just be ready to sign and play because he's going to be guaranteed top 4 minutes. Okay, here we go. Johnny D. Silvera, whether it's previous season struggles to win an OT or last year's parade to the penalty box, there's something going on every season, like the power play this year the Preds struggle with so badly. I don't think it's necessarily just something. There's always something a team, no matter what sport it is, you want to see them improve on. You want to see the Predators improve in the power play. Because overall, I mean, they're competitive. They're getting lucky in some ways. Their penalty kill could use some work. Their depth scoring could use some work. But obviously that big-time thing is the power play because it is god-awful right now. They had some good opportunities against San Jose. They still didn't make anything happen. But they had some good opportunities, and then they didn't make it happen. So you want to see that progress continuing to happen with the Nashville Predators, but we'll see what happens. I mean, it's still early in the season. If we're talking that we're halfway through the season, the Predators are still in the bottom half of the power play in terms of the league, then real concern starts to happen because you're not going to survive in the playoffs with a bottom power play like that. Granted, looking at the stats right now, 5-on-5 scoring, the Nashville Predators right now are second in the league in 5-on-5 scoring, just behind Montreal, 42 5-on-5 goals for. So, I mean, at least they can score 5-on-5, but you got to get that power play. And a team like San Jose is giving you that many opportunities in the power play and you can't convert, you deserve to lose that. And even though they played well, they deserve to lose that when they're not committing on special teams like that. Okay. This is from Madam Monday. What are your thoughts on yesterday's NWHL All-Star Game announcement? Additionally, how do you think it will impact the future of girls' development here in the Southeast? It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge for young women and for young girls to see hockey players that they can look up to and imagine, I could be just like her. That's why it's a huge impact, because they can see someone whose shoes they can actually be in, whose skates they can actually be in, and make money doing it and have a career doing it. And by the time that those young women grow up and they're professionals, that hopefully there's a league where that can be their full-time job and not some players where they have to have secondary jobs or actual full-time jobs and hockey's their secondary job. I think it's huge for the impact of women's sports because it's coming to the South. It's coming to Nashville, where hockey is booming right now. And this is going to drive it even more forward by having the NWHL All-Star Game here. And there's still so much more to go. Does it mean potential expansion? Maybe. That make it interesting for travel and everything like that. But hockey is a hub. It's a hotbed here in Nashville. And just for it to come here, for it to grow the sport, that means everything. And it means everything for young women and for young girls to have people that they can look up to come here and show off their professional sport. Okay. Abby Miles asked, what are your thoughts on the return of Watson and how will it affect the Preds and struggling special teams? I mean, I think he'll be an upgrade in the penalty kill to have him out there because he's a big body. I think he's an upgrade over Zach Rinaldo. Just talking hockey here, I think just overall he's an upgrade over those things right there. I think just his prowess in terms of blocking shots is a big deal for what he can do, and he can upgrade with that. Now, the other question that I know has been posed is, what happens when Austin Watson gets activated? So you have other players like Frederick Gaudreau, Mika Salamaki, Zach Rinaldo, all these other players, but there's also injuries with the team right now too. What's going to happen there? Frederick Gaudreau would have to clear waivers. Then people were asking Kevin Fiala. They're not going to send down Kevin Fiala. That's not going to happen. And he needs to still be playing at least top 9 minutes. But I think it's one of those things to where injuries will help. As long as players are in injured reserve, then you keep at that max roster limit. But Rocco Grimaldi would obviously be one of those players that might have to go back down if he can get through, or Zach Rinaldo. So I would prefer to see a player like Zach Rinaldo go down, or Mika Salamaki get put on waivers, if anything, just because I think that I like having Rocco Grimaldi up. I like what he can add to the team, especially playing in the bottom six. So those are just my few quick thoughts right there. And if I didn't get to your question, I'm sorry I missed it. I'll try to answer it on Twitter. But thanks so much to all of our guests. Thank you to GoVertime. Thank you to producer Buck. Appreciate you. If you missed any of this, you can go to penaltyboxradio.com, listen to the podcast later. All these different podcasts, video, audio coverage, everything you want in terms of hockey in the Music City is on penaltyboxradio.com. This is Justin Bradford. Thanks for tuning in to Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.